Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. And as always, I'm joined by...
I'm Bob Bazanko in Niles, Ohio, and you are about to witness something bigger than the 250th anniversary of American independence. So happy quincentennial.
The miraculous event that we're going to be talking about today.
Greatest thing ever.
Great, the most amazing podcast ever. Oh. Green and Red podcast. Yeah. All right, folks, this is the 500th episode of the Green and Red podcast, and you're going to get the behind-the-scenes secret history of the Green and Red podcast. I'm always wanting to drop untold story and secret history on things. But today we are joined by our musical director. We're going to be talking about the podcast and some reflections on media and things like that. But we're joined by our musical director, Moody. And so Moody is in every episode, almost every episode of the Green and Red podcast, because you listen to his music on the intro and you listen to his music on the outro. So Moody, welcome to the Green and Red podcast. The first time ever on the Green and Red podcast.
Thank you for bringing me on. It is an honor. You are like our Henry Mancini or Marvin Hamlisch or Burt Bacharach or Taylor Swift. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. We don't really have that much of a program today. I think we're going to talk a little bit about the podcast. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about independent media. And then we're going to talk a little bit just with Moody. And we also might have some other guests joining us as well, sometimes through the show, but who knows what'll happen. And so I guess my first question would be for Bob is, Bob, when we started this little endeavor six plus years ago, did you ever think that we would make it to 500 episodes?
I don't think we'd make it to five. No, we'd been talking about it for quite some time and we finally did it. Our first show ever, actually, I was in Venice. Unfortunately, I had to leave about 3 days later. So Venice is just a little bit nicer than where I am now. But no, we've been talking about it because people on the left, critique media, have done that forever. We're all familiar with the major works in it. The stuff Fair has done and Ben Badikian and of course, Chomsky and Berman and others. And so we wanted to play a role in that. And podcasting, which is now omnipresent, it's everywhere, it was pretty big then, but it was like the big guys, right? Ben Shapiro and whoever. And so we wanted to find a niche in that to do stuff that you weren't going to probably hear. And more importantly, to give a voice to people who you probably weren't going to hear. You still don't, who aren't going to be on the water. We talked to a lot of people who are very well known, but I think the real wheelhouse is to talk to people who are like actually doing stuff, activists and authors and people like that who are really playing a vital role, but they're not going to be on MSNBC or they're not going to be in Jacobin or they're not going to be on Young Turks or any of those kinds of things. But no, when we got started, I just thought it'd be fun. And who knew that we would be a survivor in this?
Yeah. And so for folks who don't know, I was started out as a grad student of Bob's and we've been friends 26 something years. And we did a lot of organizing. And then Moody, who's our art director, who just stepped away from his chair, we've been friends for almost 30 years. And the three of us, with a whole bunch of other people, actually started an organizing collective in Houston back in the early 2000s called the Houston Global Awareness Collective. And so we're all pretty tight. We all go way back. But Moody, why were you interested in contributing to our little media endeavor here, our little media app?
Because it's the coming together of beauty and intelligence of the fair sex that was pretty much my draw, I think, initially. And also learning stuff. So listening to you guys has always been a lot of fun. And you let me throw in my Dunning-Kruger opinions every blue moon. It's been fun. It's part of the ride.
And Moody's also often has been a soundboard for some of our episodes as well. Yeah. As well as contributing some of the music.
Some of the best memories I have is with you guys, because Scott said starting in, I guess it was around 99, around the Battle of Seattle. And don't forget, we did an amazing 25th anniversary series of shows on that. But we decided to do something locally. And Houston's a big city. It's fourth biggest city, industry all over the place, oil capital, energy capital, right? So the three of us and a bunch of others got together. I was a professor, so I had access to various structures and things like that. And we created this institution, which we clumsily called the Houston Global Awareness Collective. We spent a lot of time and couldn't come up with anything better than that. But we did a lot of cool stuff there. And at the time, I was doing a lot of media, just really all over, but in Houston in particular. And then I actually had a show on the local Pacific outlet there, KPFT, until the Zionists ran me off. It's something that always appealed to me, like interviewing people. And back then, in the 99-01 era, I interviewed Chomsky several times and Howard Zinn and Seymour Hersh. And so I kind of got the bug at that time. So when we had a chance in 2020 to do this again, I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be fine.
That was great. We had a lot of fun. We had Jennifer Harberry come down to town. And Chomsky come to town.
Yeah.
And some, I can't remember, somebody, was it from Panama or something like that? I'm talking about how I'm drawing blank, not NAFTA.
The Colombia, Plan Colombia?
Might have been Colombia.
I think so, yeah.
About UN development or not UN, but.
Oh, the sweatshop stuff?
Huh?
The sweatshop stuff?
Might have been, yeah.
We did a lot of sweatshop stuff. We had people come in to talk about, like, Colombia. We had Kevin Donner in Global Exchange. We knew him, so we would talk to some of his people. Alan Nairn, really well-known journalist. Norman Solomon, I think we had in, didn't we? So yeah, and again, Houston is a big city, so you have opportunities there that you wouldn't have in a lot of other places, but we really took advantage of it. And I still think, now I'm not in Houston anymore, but up to that point and in the immediate aftermath, I've never seen an activist group like that, kind of an extemporaneous activist group emerge and have the impact it did. We were known. We were like, people knew who we were. Because Scott and Moody are so handsome, I think that was what was the big draw.
And high energy too.
We spent people a lot of time in the neighborhood. We got to know a lot of people.
Yeah. But we would go to bars and there would be like groups of people would come to the bar and surround us.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Probably because Hep was buying. That's why he's not here.
Yeah, executive producer. I think the other important thing to note is that this is the era of the anti-corporate globalization movement. It's after Seattle, lots of things like that. That's actually a little bit of why we got together and started doing the organizing in the community that we were doing. And then George Bush decided to go start a couple of wars, which we also did a lot.
That really kind of lit, that was the thing, man. But I remember you that Seattle was a huge influence on you.
Yeah. I think we had just met at that point, so we weren't really doing much. I was doing radio and I was going around. I remember at that time speaking, I was doing shit with the AFL-CIO actually. And I was going around to community groups, churches, like all kinds of stuff talking about it. But we didn't get going until it would have been 2000 or maybe even after 9-1-1. I don't really remember. No, it was before 9-1-1.
We were hanging out before 9-1-1.
Yeah, we were before 9-1-1.
Just started and then 9-11 really just.
Yeah. What we did, I think what we did is we got together in the summer of 2001 to get a group together and do organizing in the lead up to what was going to be some pretty big protests at the IMF World Bank in September of 2001. We did fundraising for that and we did political education. That's when we brought in some of the speakers from Global Exchange. And then 9-11 happened and those protests for the most part got canceled. There were some protests still.
And then there was a large buildup to Iraq, right? Yeah.
The invasion of Afghanistan and then the large buildup to Iraq. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because we had raised enough money to send a dozen people. We were like, people knew who we were.
I think we had a crew of something like 40 who were going to go. We were going to be like a Houston block at those protests.
I think we had enough money for a dozen students.
I think you're right.
To cover it. We did a great job of doing that. And then but I think that the media part of it, like at the time, we were also involved. One of the ways I think I met you guys doing that too was the battle for Pacifica. Remember back in the old days, because the crazies had taken over. And we wanted that as community radio. Now we have our own opinions on it. Mine is very negative, of course. And I think that it piqued our interest in media, like how to get these things out. And so we've always been interested in that too, in getting this message out. And then when did podcasts become a thing? I was late to the game. You were listening to them. I don't know if you were Moody, but like, I know Scott was listening way before I was. When was that? When did that become a thing?
I think it was, I remember podcasts becoming a thing late 2000s to early 2010s, but I first started listening to it. It was just the bigger name stuff. It's like the NPR shows or Democracy Now! Or whatever. We're all on podcast. It wasn't until later in the 2010s where I started hearing more of the podcasts. maybe the mid 2010s, where I started hearing podcasts that were like a little bit like us, that are a little bit scrappier. Before we started recording, we were talking about how we're at 500 episodes, but off that, you were saying the average is something like 7 episodes in the life of a podcast.
A few years ago, I remember reading that.
But y'all are like Tom Brady. Like the average NFL career is what, 2-3 years or something?
But
like
he made it for 20. Yeah, we're LeBron. We're the LeBron James of podcasts.
Exactly. But it wasn't until like the mid 2010s or late 2010s where I started plugging into the smart left political trend. It's also during this period where we have this sort of, there's an element of revival, I think, to left political culture, where we see a lot more media, even though they're like media outlets that we don't really like these days, like Jacobin or things like that. Is post crash of 2008, we see a lot more left leaning politics.
Yeah. Occupy is big in it.
Occupy is a big piece of that.
Right.
Yeah. And the first podcast I ever listened to for a few years was sports, actually, just to kill time.
Yeah.
And as Scott turned me on to more kind of political podcasts, and I was still living in Houston at the time, Moody and I would see each other, and we'd go out to the bars with some of our friends in common who were all politically active and have these great discussions. So it was a training ground for what we wanted to do on a larger scale. And
No, go ahead. I have something to say.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and then the one beautiful thing about like when I started to learn a little bit about podcasting is it's actually a pretty democratic form of media. It's pretty easy to do.
My comment is going with what you're saying and also going with what I was saying about how we have this sort of shift towards more of a left, much more bigger left political culture, is that most of the podcasts, even the big name ones, especially maybe the big name ones, is I just actually think they're not that smart, right? They say stuff all the time. And I'm like, we started brainstorming how to do this podcast in late 2019. And I was like, we could be so much better at this than them, which is part of why we started. So I also just want a little dig on some of the soft dem socialist media outlets. By the way, I actually just saw this great video of a protest at Delaney Hall in New Jersey and Newark, where this actually old school Black Panther who organizes his community was just dogging on Hassan Piker, and he just called him a phony internet rat. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
No, at the end, I want to talk about that because I think that's important because we keep seeing that, right? Where I bitch every day about that to you. It's like, I see somebody who's in his or her mid-30s who probably Googled something and does a TikTok on it or on Instagram, and all of a sudden it's got 200,000 followers and likes. And it's just, so, you know, Scott comes out of study history too, but comes out of a world of activism, and I'm a historian. So, you know, we try to talk about stuff we actually know a little bit about, or when we interview people, we know something about, obviously, at that point. But it's real easy to portray yourself nowadays as an expert. And that's why our running joke is the untold story, right? Or the myth of red Texas. This was about populism. Scott was in my class, so he could vouch for this. What he claims is new and nobody's known is a myth. I've been teaching that for 40 years. You get a venue, and if you get the algorithms, people listen to you and they think you're really smart, you know what you're talking about. And what you're doing is you're putting stuff in a microwave oven. You're taking yesterday's meal and you're putting it in a microwave. You're getting original recipes here on Green and Red Podcast.
Yeah. We're like Parisian chefs.
Or Texas barbecue, good Italian food, and Indian curry.
Yeah. I'm curious, Moody, you probably play a role more of a listener than anything else of our podcast, but you have any thoughts or shows that you've heard that you appreciate
I like
themes.
It's always entertaining watching.
Yeah. That's my favorite too, obviously.
Tear into Home Slice.
Oliver Stowe.
That was cool. Course, his guy. Who's that fellow? Was
Pinto and Flounder?
Yeah,
good indeed, Eugenio. Yeah,
yeah,
and Jefferson Morley.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't have been able to do that without this podcast because we could approach them. I wouldn't have to. It's hard to go through intermediaries, and that's the thing about left media. It portrays itself as giving a voice. They won't touch me when I talk about Kennedy. Whenever I have on these conspiracy people, I immediately say, "Hey, there's another side to that. That's bullshit." And I send them stuff I've written or whatever, and they don't want to hear it. So in their own way, they're like gatekeeping and manufacturing their own consent as much as anybody. So that's the beauty of this too. It gives us, we're autonomous. We can do whatever we want. And when you hit a topic like the JFK stuff, which obviously that's my wheelhouse, it's something I know quite well as pretty much anybody in that regard. And we can do that. We can go on and get it there. We don't have anybody to modify it or mediate it. And that's really cool. which is one part of this I really like.
That's an important thing too, is that another thing that we do, which we don't talk about too much on the podcast, is we put out like press releases from time to time and trying to get on other shows to talk about things that we think are important. But it's very much like gatekeeped or mediated by other outlets. And maybe we're not getting on those shows because there's like a whole lot going on. We actually did a bunch of stuff on the Department of Defense last fall, which we happened to put that press release out the morning of the assassination of Charlie Kirk, right? So we were like lost it in that news cycle. And sometimes we do get on some of these other shows, right? And we've developed a good relationship with other podcasts. But I think it's important for us to come up with an idea and be able to put it out there. And we get like probably tens of thousands of people listen to our shows if we combine it all together between like social media, YouTube, and the audio platforms. So I think that's like an important thing, is like we can talk about stuff that the status quo or what have you of this like left media doesn't even want to talk about. The JFK stuff is like such a good example of that. That's why I love doubling down on the JFK stuff. Plus, sometimes those guys who are also not smart, they're screenwriters or just conspiracy nuts, want to do battle with us on social media. They can stay away from us now, but like we used to get a lot of attention through. We also had Chomsky on to talk about the JFK conspiracy, which also like really burned them up too.
Yeah. To go back to the origin story, which I think is instructive, because I point out, like, I was in Venice for the first one. And then I had to leave. And so we started at a critical time in world history. It's what Marx might call a world historical event. Like we started in 2020, like at the outset of COVID, like literally, like pretty much that day. I was sick. I had just gotten over like being sick when we did our first show. I just thought I had a cold. And looking back, it's like I probably had COVID. I was in Northern Italy. And then, so I get back and we start doing shows and it's fun. And the world is upside down because of COVID and you have shutdowns and all that stuff. And then boom. At the end of May, the whole country explodes after the George Floyd murder. So like our creation is occurring at the same time as probably the biggest social dislocation, which is ongoing, right? In the 21st century, at least, if not longer. Trump was president. We have COVID. The country's falling apart. He's making things worse. He's throwing gas on every fire. You have those uprisings throughout the country in 2020. And like, we're doing it. We're like in that, trying to figure out what to do and how to cover it. And we weren't that well known at the time, but we were doing our best to cover this. We did shows on COVID. We did shows on the uprisings. We talked to activists, Scott Crow.
Who's really on the elections too, the 2020 elections.
Yeah. So
yeah, we got the Crow episode was good too. I enjoyed that one. I remember that.
Yeah. Scott's great. He's very well known. He's done so much. He's had an article on the front page of the New York Times about him.
Of the fold.
Yeah.
So we've had Scott on a bunch of times too.
What was his picture in a spread in Vanity Fair?
Yours is coming out soon, isn't it, Moody?
Moody Centerfold.
I think he's referring to where I was actually in a spread in Vanity Fair with the climate movement.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Definitely. That was great. I was like, right on.
Well, Moody's probably more like Field and Stream, right?
Yeah.
Guns and ammo.
Yeah,
not so much, but yeah, field strength.
But no, like we got started like in a weird time, but like in retrospect, it was neat to. We created an archive of that now, right? That's the thing that I think is really cool as a historian. Like we have an archive now out there. Like I've always thought that about my stuff because I have my own YouTube page with all kinds of stuff I've been doing over the years. And now we have this, and we have 500, and we have 500 episodes. We have other stuff on there too that's not technically an episode, speeches and stuff like that. Daniel Ellsberg in Houston, Chomsky speeches in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, we just did a panel
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we did one last year. Like, this is an archive of that era, which I think is important. And it's an archive, and I think what you said earlier, like to brag a little bit, but like a lot of the stuff, because I listen to other podcasts and they just make me nuts. They're not terribly profound. When I hear these people, I don't know, like I was going to talk about Hassan Piker at the end. I defend Hassan Piker. I think the attack on him is insane, right? But every time, like I never knew who he was until recently. So I'm getting all these videos, these clips. It's not a whole show, but it's 3-4 minutes or whatever. And every time I see that, I send the same thing to Scott. I defend Hassan Piker, but he's not a bright guy. I think the last one was, Hassan Piker's kind of dumb. So, you see that? And I kept like, it's maddening. Like, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I was waiting for you guys to laugh about that because, you know, they always tell me I think I am. But if I talk about something, I generally know what I'm talking about. And so to hear these people become famous, the Jimmy Dore and Crystal Ball and Sam Cedar and all these people, and they're just like banal in so many ways. And they do some good stuff. Amy Goodman. So Noam, tell us your thoughts. That's an Amy Goodman interview. Your thoughts, Noam. Your thoughts, Joe. Your thoughts, Moody. Your thoughts, Scott. And so it's like, if we're talking about the environment and the movement, Scott knows what he's talking about. He's part of it, right? He's in on it. Talking about, like you said, JFK, I know that shit. I've been studying it for 40 years. Or the military-industrial complex or the military-civil-military relations. Like, I'm a brag on that one. Ain't nobody knows it. Ain't nobody does it like we do. We've done so many shows on, like, you can call it military dissent, which is not a great term, but it is. But relationships between the military and, like, Trump, we've done countless shows on that. Nobody else does that. And so I think that's cool. And again, because we have control over what we do. But we're doing stuff that other people just won't touch, or they don't know how to touch.
One of the things I find interesting, particularly on that topic, which is one of the themes of the show, like we have a number of themes that we've hit on. We do like a lot of history and connecting historical anniversaries to current events. We talk a lot about liberalism. We do pop culture stuff. We talk about the activists and organizing stuff. But like on that sort of like civil military relationship affair stuff, is I hear a lot of other shows talk about that, and maybe they have some people who know who come on it, but I actually feel like we're like pretty plugged in with what's going on there and actually do really good stuff, which I don't hear on the other shows. It all feels very much like a surface level for me. And it's also a little bit of this, there's a little bit of level of like surprise that, oh, the military dissented against Trump. Is like, I feel like that's like an ongoing theme. I think maybe they bought into it a little bit more because Hegseth is such a jackass, but still.
Yeah, I would say outside of, there are plenty of military veteran officers themselves, retired officers who understand this. But for civilians, yeah, we do it as well as anybody. And I think in general, what we would call ruling class politics, right? That's the one thing I think most left media focuses, and with good reason, on the bottom, on activists and so on, not the kind of activists we talk to. But we do live in this structured society where people have power over us. There is a ruling class. And a lot of folks just blow that off. They get what I would consider a pretty primitive view of it, like a really kind of elementary pedestrian view. The ruling class is bad and they own all the banks. It's way more nuanced than that. And so when we study that and we cover that, I've been studying that too for decades, right? Everybody, not everybody, but, and it's important to study workers and protesters and women and all that. Absolutely. And a lot of people are doing it and I love their work. But we also have to study people at the top because they're the ones who are like putting their boot on our neck and sometimes literally. Like what we see all the time now, an ICE protest, police protest, whatever, right? And we're doing that, which is really cool. And to be able to do that now for 500 episodes is really neat. The other part, like Scott mentioned, history, one of the more fun things I've gotten a chance to do is the Jimmy Carter stuff, right? Jimmy Carter is a saint among liberals and the left. After he retired and left the White House, with good reason, I can't think of anybody who had that level, like president or whatever, who later dedicated his life to doing good stuff. And Carter's legit, absolutely. He's miserable, neoliberal, militarist president. And so to be able to do that and to get that out there, and I cut a lot of hell for that. People were really pissed off. Oh, Jimmy Carter's a saint. But yeah, I get it. Dole House's Peace Prize, all that, guinea worms, all that. I think that's great. I really do. Like, legit, honestly. But he was like, it was just a typical American president. Really bad. And to get that out there is really neat to be able to say that. And that's one of those where I did a lot of stuff on other people's podcasts, too. We put a press release out like when Carter died, or maybe when he turned 100, or maybe both times. I don't even remember now. But I did a lot of other interviews and other shows on the Jimmy Carter stuff, which I thought was really cool. Because you got to get out there, not to like just shit on the guy, but to let you know the best person in the world becomes president. And he's not the best person in the world anymore. He's the president. I hate to say this because people give it, the difference between Jimmy Carter and Trump is not as great as you think it is as presidents. It's there, absolutely, but it's not as significant as you might think. Another thing we've done, and I know Moody gets kicked out of this because it's something we talk about a lot, is we do a lot of pop culture stuff too. Movies, music, that kind of stuff, which is
fine. Yeah, no, sure.
Moody, when we got started, Moody is a musician. He's in a couple of Houston cover bands, I believe. And so we asked him to do something for us. He created what we call the Green and Red Blues, which is our sometimes intro, sometimes outro music. What's the name of your band? What's the name of your band?
We were the Lenores, and then we became the Lonely Ones.
Yeah,
we just
need a better name. Need a better name, man.
I want it to be Das Cringe. Because you're entertaining elementary school kids most of the time.
That sounds like a death metal band there.
That's cringe.
You're like Raffy or, I don't know. You need to hook up
Donovan,
and like
Donovan.
You need to do a crossover with Ms. Rachel. You'll hit it big then.
Yeah.
Ms. Rachel, who's actually like, it's funny when Ms. Rachel's name come up. I always tell people, a lot of my friends have grandkids and they go, yeah, I watch Ms. Rachel. I'm a huge fan. And they think I'm kidding. It's, no, really. I'm a huge fan of Ms. Rachel. I think she's fucking awesome. She's getting a Nobel Prize or a FIFA World Prize. Ms. Rachel should be the next FIFA prize winner.
She does make the top of the list of the most anti-Semitic people in the world.
Really?
That's the world we live in.
That's real. That's real.
Ms. Rachel is real considered one of the top 10. I think Tucker Carlson won it.
Yeah.
But Ms. Rachel was like one of the
five. She was in the top five this last year. Yeah.
For biggest, that's how fucked up the world has become, right? And that's something. Like when we started, there's some stuff we study history. You can see a lot of stuff. I was talking to Moody, I think was it yesterday? I said, it was maddening because for 30, 40 years, you've been saying this shit and it's all come true now. And it's so maddening, right? Some of this stuff I could have never seen coming, right? Like I'm very familiar with the weaponization of anti-Semitism. It hit me. Like Pacifica, the good guys came after me for criticizing Israel in 2002. But it's unimaginable to see what's happened since then. How anti-Semitism has become a way to essentially abrogate the First Amendment. It's out of school to take their degrees away, to jail people. So that's stunning. And then I got to say, the one that really floored me is the response to Charlie Kirk getting killed. I still can't. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I barely knew who this guy was. He was this bigot who was trying to get professors fired, getting them doxxed. People, because of Charlie Kirk, people were calling professors and issuing them death threats. And all of a sudden, the whole fucking world revolves around him.
Going on campuses and picking fights with 18 and 19-year-olds. Yeah. And somehow to prove his intellectual superiority because he's debating some 19-year-old kid.
That'd be like having a debate with Trump.
Right? That's more like debating a 4-year-old, but yeah.
Oh, no, he could tell a whale from a shark. A shark from a bear. That was it. On his cognitive test. One of the things you have to tell the shark from the bear, and he could do that.
It's amazing how he's had 4 cognitive tests in a year. And how often do presidents have to take cognitive tests is my question.
I can't believe he's that brilliant. So they want to reaffirm it. It's just like, Moody, you're a scientist. Don't you have to repeat?
Yeah.
Repetition. So they just can't believe he's so brilliant. You know, so they just like, this can't be. No one's this brilliant. So they do it again.
First succeed, repeat 2 more times. So statistically significant.
There you go.
Yeah.
Moody, you have a PhD in biology, right? For years, I've been telling everybody it was physics for 30 years. But how many people do you know who can tell a bear from a shark?
Most people can usually do that with the exception of a biostatistician.
But according to Trump, Biden or Obama couldn't do it.
Yeah, Biden or Obama couldn't.
Is it he doesn't. No, he legit says that.
Bears and sharks.
And I think I wouldn't say on the inside because we are not. The word I often used to describe us is we're a boutique podcast. We're up there. We do really good shit, but we're not Sears and Roebuck. We're not Walmart, whatever, Amazon. I've learned a lot about media. And I think, I hate to say this, even my impression of left media has probably been, it's become more jaded, I think, being part of it. A lot of people just want numbers. They're out there. They're like influencers. They're trolling. They're doing clickbait shit. And I think that's the kind of environment we're in now.
That's what I tell myself. That's why they never asked me to come on.
Like I said, your brain.
Actually, the problem is that they need AI if they put me on because they're going to have so many numbers. Everything will freeze.
Just need robots to tell them what's going on.
Exactly.
I just also, I can't say that enough is like, I just actually feel like so many of these shows are like interesting or not smart and then portray themselves as edgy.
Right.
I consume less left media than I used to because of how jaded I've become about it.
We were talking earlier, like I said, the first podcast I listened to were about sports. And then I did start listening to, I guess it would have been around 2019 where pretty much most of the stuff I think I heard was about Bernie Sanders. And it was the same format every time. People don't understand how revolutionary this is and how radical this is. And it was the same thing, no matter what you listen to. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about Bernie Sanders. They're more negative now than usual, but like in American politics, yeah, he's good. He's out there, absolutely. But dude, he's his Chomsky would also say in Europe, he'd be like a Christian Democrat. Like he's some kind of moderate. In Italy, Bernie Sanders would be nothing. He'd be like not out of the ordinary. Maloney and the right wing support health, Medicare for all, national health care, right? So I started hearing that, and it was the same story on every podcast. And a lot of them were connected, that hub of Brooklyn that kind of filtered out. But it was the same thing all over, and nothing critical. People don't realize how revolutionary Bernie Sanders is, and they don't understand, and this and that. And then they start to do history, and like, Abraham Lincoln was the greatest revolutionary of all time. And I was like, dude, I study history. Abraham Lincoln was like the godfather of American capitalism. And we did talk about history shows. We did one, it was like a month or two ago after the Supreme Court, the Calais decision, with our good friend Clayton Lust, who's a professor who's been on many times too. I'm bragging, yeah. But that's as good as anything I've heard on this topic. It was basically how the Confederacy won the Civil War. It's a history of that, which starts with Lincoln. And left podcasts, like they want their own romance and they want their own mythology. And I don't see what good that does.
No.
We're seeing this now where some people mythologize the squad and you have the Democratic Party, which is another one of our favorite topics, right? Just how bad the Democrats suck. And we're seeing that now. Oh my God, are we seeing that now?
I want another theme that we do a lot of, and I feel like we've done this a lot since we were doing it before, but we've really done it since 2022 is around some of these foreign policy / war events that have happened. So we did a whole series on the Ukraine war. And at the time, it's very much like everyone's all in because they're fighting Putin. We did a number of episodes on that, at least a dozen, right? 10 to 12.
The first one was before the invasion, in fact.
We
were ahead of it. Yeah.
But highly critical of the Democrats. Yeah. And I feel like there's a lot of people in left media that come, left media and outside have really come around that and not just the far right.
Oh, yeah. When we started, we were Putin's bitch. That's what people were calling us. You're Putin's bitch.
It's true.
And we've never been pro-Russia, but the war. And I think it's proven, like, how many people have died? A million people dead? The country's destroyed? That's not productive.
No.
I was pretty proud of that. You know,
same with Gaza. I think a lot of people on the left were immediately opposed to like what Netanyahu didn't or what the Israelis did in Gaza. But the Democratic Party wasn't. It's not their campaign in 2024, right?
It still is.
Yeah.
They're still trying to jimmy rig primaries to defeat Syed in Michigan and Plattner. Look at what they're coming up with against Plattner. It's because he opposes, he's an anti-Zionist. Oh, he texted with other women. Oh, gasp. Oh, no. He did
not. Trump would never do that.
You have a president who rapes everybody, you know?
Yeah. In this current, as low as we become, or maybe we were always there, but it's amazing. That's even a thing that you think will work.
But only liberal Democrats play that against their own, right? Oh, no. I told Scott, I say, Gary Hart must wake up every day and say, how the
fuck? Oh, you told me that yesterday.
You know? Yeah. I should be president. I should have been president. I was with a good looking young woman on my lap. Who cares?
But we did a whole series around Gaza and the genocide in Palestine for like a year. We still do episodes on it, but there was a period.
By the way, if you go to our YouTube page, there's playlists.
Right.
So you can go to Ukraine. You can go to Gaza and Palestine. You can go to military industrial complex. Like I said, it's an archive. The stuff on Gaza has been great. My good friend Eskander Sadiqi, who's been all over the media on Iran, as good as anybody. We've done a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, that's the third one is the Iran stuff, is we've done a whole series on Iran as well. And so I just think that thinking about those three different series that we did and continue to do, we still do Palestine stuff. We still do. I did an episode on the flotilla a couple of weeks ago and Iran. It's just like, we're constantly hammering on that. And we're poking at the sacred cows, right? We're not poking just at Trump and the Republicans. It's almost too easy to do that, but it's the Democrats and how much they are complicit in this or responsible for this is the thrust of what we talk.
A lot of good media stuff too. We've had a lot of good media with Greg Shupak and Mickey Hoff and late Nolan Higdon. You know, it's the media bears such a massive responsibility for the shit we're in today. They do like Trumpsker. It's just quite amazing. He calls women bitches. He says quiet piggy. He screams and yells at them, and they just deal with it.
Threatens them. Well, threats.
Yeah, they threatens them. And we're in a country where the resistance comes from a nighttime comedian, like Jimmy Kimmel, right? That's insane. But that's where we are.
Yeah.
Because the media has just abdicated its role. They're just garbage, the main media, the corporate media, whatever you want to call it, legacy media, whatever you want to call it. I mean, we've been like kind of critical. There's a lot of good left media out there. There's a lot of people who I really listen to and I eagerly read or listen to their stuff. But I don't think they tend to be that. I think they tend to be more like us. They're like, they're not on the A-list. We're not going to get invited to the Met Gala. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Did you ever get invited to the Met Gala?
I'm still waiting for my invitation.
Moody, you ever been to the Met Gala?
No.
Yeah.
So, although I would have enjoyed going to the protests this year.
Yeah.
The final thing that we talked about when I remember this conversation when we were brainstorming the podcast is that we are very much about wanting this to be about direct action and organizing, which has been a pretty big theme in our show. And so we're constantly doing shows on what's happening in the streets. We do a lot of history of different groups. I actually, just yesterday, we posted a new episode about the history of the Earth Liberation Front. We have one coming up on the history of Rainforest Action Network with a new book out with a historian, David Benack. So I think that's also just a really, obviously it skews environmental, but we also talk to lots of other activists as well.
Two of my favorite people to talk to, and this is your ballpark more than mine, or
Jesus Christ,
Will Potter and Jake Conroy.
Right,
Will
right.
And Jake are awesome. Who've done animal rights activism, environmental activism. And what they're talking about isn't just for that. You don't have to be a vegan or an environmental radical to listen to them and understand what they're saying and get ideas from it. And yeah, Jake and Will are awesome. And that comes from your world, so to speak. And the stuff like you just recently on environmental, RAN. You haven't done that one yet, have you? The RAN one?
No, it's coming. It'll be coming out next week.
But so we're doing that stuff. And again, these guys, they're as authors, they might get on other podcasts, but you understand and you can ask them questions that the Brooklyn crowd probably isn't going to because they're going off a press release or whatever.
It's interesting. I did a guest spot on a podcast last week on This Is Revolution. I love the This Is Revolution folks, right?
Jason Miles, great guy, good friend.
And M. Toussaint is co-host. They're great. But it was they do a film screening thing and they screen the movie If a Tree Falls, which is an inside story on the Earth Liberation Front. I did it and I was co-guest with Tom Zaitsoff, who we've had on the show. But it was amazing to me in the chat and on the show because we did kind of discussion with some of the participants, how much they tried to put everything in these frames of these archaic sort of Marxist terms. It was like, they're the lumpen oligarchy or whatever. And it was almost like silly, right? And one of the things is like that really strikes me is like, there's a lot of people who are doing organizing and street action and things like that. And they're not thinking about things in some sort of like theoretical sort of like framework as much as, okay, we're going to help people. We're going to help whatever's in harm's way here and see what we can do. And that's what really bothers me a little bit about some of this like left media is that they actually don't think about how do we build power? How do we build movement? They just want to comment, right? It's a little bit of a wannabe sort of pundit culture. I hope we don't fall into that too much. I tried not to do that. But I think it's like an important thing is that organizing, direct action, building power are like really what the end goals should be here. And part of that is having a healthy critique of the status of the ruling class and the status quo, whatever.
You more than me, but we both have feet in that world too. I did a lot of like in Houston, a lot of organizing and street activism. But
I don't get that a lot of these other shows have a lot of background.
I've talked to people who were like at the beginning of some of those lefty Brooklyn things. And they broke, they split because they wanted that to be like, they wanted them to be there for the movement and they didn't want to do that. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, like when you talk to these folks, you're like, you know what to ask them and because you've lived that life, you're in that world. Like when we talked to Richard Slotkin or Alan Schrecker, like I know how to ask a question to them. I know how to interview them because that's what I do. And Chomsky, like we know how to talk, like the stuff with Chomsky was cool. Is like, we did history. Everybody talks to Chomsky about the media. We talked to him about history in the 60s and Vietnam and all that. And it was so cool because it's hard to be original with somebody who's like all over the media, all over the world.
Talks and knows about everything.
But I thought it was fresh. Like when he got a kick out of it, he was like telling stories and laughing about stuff. I think it's cool on a personal level. And I say this all the time. It's given me a chance to get to know, so to speak, like John Sayles, we interviewed earlier this year. I've been watching this guy's movies for 40 years. I got to talk to him I can't remember his name. Was it Daniel Goldhagen? The guy who
Daniel Goldhagen.
go to the who directed how to blow up a pipeline, right? The guys who were directors of the encampments. We talked to authors who were one. We talked to a guy who wrote a book about the Grateful Dead not long ago. Well, it's just like, on a personal level, I'm a working class kid from the wrong side of the tracks in Niles, Ohio. And so it's really cool to be able to have this, to talk to Noam Chomsky and Seymour Hersh and, you know, all these, like Alan Schrecker, like I said before.
John Sayles, yeah.
John Sayles or Andy Basevich. We did a bunch of shows with him before he retired. And it's been a lot of fun. And of course, then you get to work with Moody John Diallo, which is just, you can't even put that into words.
We're kind of getting to the end of our time, but Moody, do you have any last thoughts on the Green and Red podcast?
Last thoughts. I think it is a great source for learning about new things as a part-time educator, or actually full-time in some ways. I think it's, yeah, y'all are great to listen to, and it's a hoot. And I don't really have much to add to the conversation, though, other than that I know that we all three enjoy the greatness of Joe Strummer and what he brought to the music world, as well as the political world. I think
we are. That's another thing that bonds us, our mutual love of the Clash. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's true. And until Spotify screwed us over on copyright stuff, it was part of our themes.
Yeah, that used to be a theme song, Jenny Jones. But,
yeah.
The only band that matters, right? And the Who also.
Do you have any last thoughts on the Green Red podcast, Bob, as we embark on our next 500 episodes?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Listen to us. Tell your friends about us. You're going to hear stuff here. Like, I really mean this, like everybody says it, but you will. You'll hear stuff here. You're not going to hear either on the Lefty podcast. There you go.
There you go. Look at Moody with the branding.
Brandon.
If any of you are like, I make a donation, we got hats, we got books, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
But who knows what the future holds for another 500 more. Who knows? Shit.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Speaking of that, so like Bob said, I didn't wear my green and red hat today, but we still have hats. If you want one for $25, email us at greenandredpodcast.org and we'll make that happen. We also have a number of books. We have Bob's book, The Masters of War. We have lots of copies of that that we can give to you for $40.
Yeah.
And then we also recently had a donation from Annie Leonard and Andre Crothers, who's going to be on the show soon. And they have a new book out called The Protest Book, which is like a sort of like coffee table picture, very beautiful picture, beautiful book, actually, of sort of history of protest. And they donated a bunch of copies to us. And so we also have that for $40 as well.
And if you're ever in Houston, dinner with Moody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dinner with Moody.
Is that 500?
Yeah. 500 easy. And dinner's on you too.
And dinner, you can get dinner with Moody for $500.
Yeah. You can get a Frenchie's chicken or something like that. You buy me dinner, I'll buy you beer. Yeah. So folks, we've been doing the Secret History of the Green and Red podcast on our 500th episode. If you like what you hear, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on an audio platform, give us a rate and a review. And then if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit that support button or become a patron at greenandredpodcast.org. Moody, I'm really glad that you got to join us today.
Well, no, congratulations. Didn't have much to say today, but I don't know if it's maybe because it's cloudy and rainy outside.
Yeah.
Not sure. But if you should invite me again, I'll come more prepared.
It's all good. Maybe today was just a fun.
Come up with another song for us.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It's the Ballad of Scott and Bob.
Everyone else out there, make trouble and misbehave, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You guys stay care. Congrats.